Well, it's good to see you. I have a nice piece of steak tonight. I mean it. Well, it's not the handout, it is the core of Galatians. You know, I believed many years ago that if we really want to fight for Christian freedom, we need to look at Galatians and go to the historical background and see the debate between Paul and the churches at that time, who were exposed to a kind of Judaism, and Paul's agony in fighting back, trying to push them back to remain in the gospel. But three main issues actually run in Galatians. The first one, which is my concern, if we have time, we get two and three, is the enslavement. To be enslaved to the law, to be enslaved to sin, to be enslaved to habits, to be enslaved to the common ideas in the society, which Paul speaks of as the principles that controls our social and political life. I don't know how much you hear in your journey with Christ about the human nature. We know from the Bible that we were given two important elements, stability and growth. We have stability in us, which is a main, well, left foot, right foot, and growth, which is we progress. So we have what is concrete, stable, because that's what makes us humans, but we also grow. Look at yourself, how you were, I would say, 10 years ago. I remember last night I was sitting in bed waiting for to get the news. My wife went to bed at 3:30. She thought that if she kept alive, she can speed up the result. But you know, like many Americans, you know. I tried to sleep and I dozed. But you know, funny enough, I remembered my childhood. The good pieces and the ordinary one. And I'm sorry, I still enjoy the only ones. No regret. It's done in ignorance, you know. That's fine. I was comparing notes with one of the ladies who took me to lunch. And she told me about sitting. I said, you know, Cindy, you are no more than a lieutenant, you know, in evil. I am a general. No, I'm not bragging, I'm just saying, you know, something has happened, past, is, you know, but you know, believe it or not, your past is part of your stability. Because each one of us must have learned something unforgettable, right? Tell me I'm wrong, and I'll tell you I am not. Yeah, absolutely right. We learn something that we cannot forget. That I will never do this again, or I will do it again. You know? That's the whole thing is, in the stability, we grow. That's why I'm asking people who struggle in the inner life to get hold of the Confessions of St. Augustine and to read it. As far as I know, Saint Augustine is the only Christian person in our history who was very brutal about himself, spoke freely. The Catholic Church had to censor the translation. You know, it was funny. You get the Catholic edition in English, it's almost two-thirds of the original. And they banked on the idea that nobody really is fluent in Latin. You know? But when the Oxford University Press put the English translation, and then we saw all the parts, till I get to know Latin very well, all the parts that were actually deleted. Guess what was it? His temptation with sex. Sexual temptations.
When was that Latin translation? When did that appear?
Oh, the Latin, the original Latin in the 5th century. But the English translation about 1920 something.
So it's just this century?
Yeah, this century. It was not actually a book that most Catholics read. Oh, you see, don't ask me about what the church is doing because I'm not in that business. They will select certain things like prayers. The most common prayer that was selected by all Catholics, God, you have made us for yourself, and we will not rest till we are resting you. Yeah. But what the struggle, the man's struggle with his own ideas, with his own sexuality, was completely deleted from the English translation. 1927 was the last edition. But maybe something prior to that. I saw an English translation about that size, one third of the original. So the stability and the growth. But in the stability, we have a fight. One front is things you don't like and you are afraid of. I kept thinking, you know, about, am I enslaved to anything in my past? And the answer is no. I think I've grown up so much that things that I've done when I was young, I'll never do again. Because I became convinced that they are very stupid. You know? There is a pride in us and in me not to be stupid. Not to be irrational again. Why did I do such a stupid thing? You know, and then in the struggle in the area of stability, there is something great, the greater gift that God gave us, called the memory. The memory. You know, have you ever met someone who lost his memory? Have you? Or become senile?
Yeah.
What do you normally notice? A change in the personality. Why? Because there's no stability that allows him to come across as someone who is holding himself or herself. And that's why when Paul speaks about enslavement, without using our modern vocabulary, he speaks about our past. And you know, in Judaism, and this is something maybe also in Christianity, but I'm not aware of it. In Judaism, the memory plays 90% of all plays of 90% of everything in Judaism, such as the feasts. The feasts are time of remembrance. I don't know if you have attended ever a Passover. Have you attended a Passover meal?
I've been to one career Shabbat dinner on a Friday night. That's about it.
Maybe the majority of Christians will go to a bar mitzvah because it is almost a social occasion. But the Passover meal, have you ever attended a Sabbath meal?
Yep.
A Sabbath meal. Have you ever attended the Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah? Have you ever attended the Sukkot, the tabernacle? No. What actually happens here is a remember of a past event. a gathering with friends, food and drinks and prayer that links you with the
past.
With the past and brings the friends also. So the community is made out of a celebration that is sheltering itself in the habits, in the consistent way of repetition of feasts and prayers and meals. That's why you see an Orthodox Jew is always dressed in a special way that he cannot change. It gives him or her a consistent appearance,
identity.
See? I assume that you must have seen Fiddler on the Roof, the movie, or the theater. You see that Hasidic prayer, which actually they wear like a vest. It's no longer you put it on your neck, but you wear it all the time. It is the same prayer, but they cut in it a place for the neck. Yeah, no? The same prayer show, but they cut a no for the neck. And you put it on. I forgot to bring mine to you. It's nice. And you see the tassels, you know, coming. But this does not necessarily lead to holiness. You know, the downfall of a ritual is that the more it is repeated, the more its significance is lost.
Complacency,
yes, and it's no longer even linked to the original.
That's significant.
You know, I have a story. I always tell the story whenever I go. I hope you catch it. One of the best stories about the power of a ritual.
Power of ritual.
Yeah, in a monastery, the brothers had a nice cat.
Cat.
Yes.
Cat.
C-A-T. and when the abbot used to come to speak to them, the cat will go between the legs of the monks, meowing and looking to be, you know. You know. And then the abbot said, it distracts me. Catch that cat and put the ribbon down its neck and hide it in the stairs here. Okay? So every time the abbot comes to speak, they catch the cat, put a ribbon around its neck, and tie it to the stairs. In the meantime, the abbot died and the cat died. But whenever the abbot is coming to speak to the brothers, they get a cat and put a ribbon around it and tie it to the stairs. So the original idea was quite a good one, but it became enslavement to a habit. You know, to a habit that where you do it without thinking. You know?
Which you talked about with liturgy. Liturgy is not bad.
It can become like a ticking clock. You know? And we used to have a priest, we used to call him Abu Surya, and what's that in English? Abu Surya.
Surya?
Surya, the fast train.
Surya.
By the time the choir is said a hymn, he has finished two thirds of the liturgy. So the liturgy that can take an hour and a half is done 25 minutes. Father Express, that's, you know, and we kept saying, why are we here? What's going on? But wait, why are we enslaved to something that we are afraid of, but we can't break the cycle? If I am enslaved to something and I don't like it, I want to fight it, but I can't break the cycle. From Paul and from the fathers and from psychology, how many reasons here?
Four
reasons. Number one is the conviction that this particular habit is for my own good. If I discover that this particular habit is for my own ruin, I would lose it. Gradually, I will lose it. You know, we had a section of people addicted to alcohol. It started by thinking of, you know, I'll get better if I drink, you know, a glass of something. And became a habit. Everyone, you know, and then became addicted. And then he doesn't feel well till he is, you know, gets his share of alcohol. We have a journalist who is addicted to morphine. Oh yes, morphine is very addictive. And he tried to break the cycle and couldn't. So he came to Dr. Lake. And Dr. Lake said to him, you know, if you want me to treat you, you have to do what I ask you. Take a month off work and bring your toilet bag and the things you need to change, and I'll put you in a camp. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm not going to tell you. They give me a replacement for the morphine, but they decrease the quantity. But when that is in progress, he is not in control of himself. But in the camp, they have very mighty male nurses who can control him. And one of the things, I have been to that camp several times to get training myself. One of the things that I have seen, observed, is the physical exercises, like lifting weights, like swimming and cycling and playing tennis, you know. When they are exhausted physically, they sleep like babies. Because in the addiction, there's an area. He wants to leave reality. Sign off, you know. Escape from what he has. The poor man had problems. His wife died in a car accident. His 16 years old kid left home and disappeared. Nobody knows about him. And the police was looking for him without any success. And he had so much. And suddenly he found his rest in alcohol. So in that way, he wanted to escape. But then, surprise, writing childhood.
Writing about his childhood?
His childhood, yes. And I am saying, what's the use of that? And then discover that when you remember certain good things, your self-image is polished. You are not that bad person. You know, write your history, and then the therapist will take something and said, "Ah, you did that. You know, what sort of good things did you have?" And thirdly, which was very very important, is a session of communication. How you relate to people with you in the camp, how you speak to them kindly. How to change your vocabulary. Because new vocabulary, nice vocabulary, peaceful vocabulary, joyful vocabulary will change the mood of the mind. Isn't that strange? That actually could be traced back to an American psychologist Paul Frankel. If that name means anything to you.
Frankel?
Yes. Quite known in America about 30, 40 years ago.
Ask her if she's the expert.
Is he mentioned? He's not mentioned anymore. Is he?
Yeah.
And number four, I was amazed that they give him a play.
A play?
Yeah, on the theater. And ask him to read the text and select the one that he liked to be. What is the art in that is how do you look like? Would you like to be another person? I debated the matter frankly and said, is that what Paul is saying, to be a new man in Jesus Christ? And he said, yes. But how does the church act that? I said, the church doesn't. And he said, well, I know that I'm disappointed. But you see, here is the whole issue. Now, how this is related to Galatians? You think George B. Bowie has gone off the course, right? No, I haven't. You think I've gone off the course?
Go back to Galatians.
Chechi. Tell her, Chechi.
Don't, careful. You don't know what you're saying.
No, he does.
Oh, is that Arabic?
It's hieroglyphic. Means honry. Oh. You can use it for your wife when she is, yeah, when she burns the oatmeal or the chichi.
Chichi. I was thinking
chichi. Chichi. It's himi in chichi.
You know, we were in Galatians a minute ago.
Okay. How is the rest in Galatians, you know? If you read Galatians carefully, you see Paul painting two good pictures. The picture of the Jew who is very well established in the stability. The feasts, the seasons, the circumcision, you know, the food, the kosher food, and the way to live. And he thinks this is the best. And Paul say, no, this is what will kill you. Because you are actually not free. Your life has been frozen. Entered into an area of a freezing period of your life. You don't grow. You don't change. Where's your freedom? No freedom. That's why you have in the first page about the minor and the inheritance. What do you think is inheritance? You know, in verse 3, when you were minors, you were enslaved under the elements of the cosmos, you know, and that will be the system that upholds everything in life. You are enslaved to everything that actually makes the human society. Now, how can I be in the human society without being a slave? How can I come to the society, live in the society from Monday to Saturday, you know, or to Friday, without being a slave to the elements of the world, you know? Three things in Paul, absolutely important. Number one is to know that these are not the source of my life.
What three things are not the source?
Anything in the society, the dollar, the job you have, the
being in society without being a slave to the elements of the world.
Of the world. You know, like all the commotion that took place in our life, yeah, you know, this week.
Yeah. So,
I bet you, at least 50% of America was waiting for the result. For the result, at least. People went to bed at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. I bet you. I bet you. Very few people manage to shut off the TV or the radio and go to bed.
That doesn't mean our life
derived from it. No, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter who is in the White House.
It's not. My life doesn't come from
it. You know, simply because, you know, because, you know, you are not able to change very much. You vote for this or that, sorry, it will not bring any change. There are other big brains. Number one, it's not the source of my life. Number two, it's not eternal.
It's not eternal?
No. By all means, look at the at how America was. You know, Bob, it will be good for a journalist like you to write an article how life used to look like before we discovered electricity. By the way, how old is electricity?
Old as lightning.
Discovered electricity.
Well, Ben Franklin is, you know, our hero of electricity with his key and kite and all that.
100 years ago.
Yeah, Tesla.
100 years ago. How life looked like 100 years ago, you'd be surprised. Now we're using our cars, we have our iPads, and the cell phones, and the garage, you press something, it shut down, you don't do it by hand, you know, isn't that right?
Yes.
And the water, you know, everything is electricity, and the traffic lights, you know.
HVAC.
You know, before that there was a man standing under the rain, using his hands, like the traffic. That was 100 years ago. And you know, things always will change. Certainly. Things are not eternal. Number three.
So they're not eternal.
No. Number three, which is very hard to understand sometimes. Everything we have in our life is impersonal.
Life is impersonal.
Yes. And the problem is that sometimes they can convert us from persons to items. These are actually the elements of the world.
So then with your dichotomy, the one Jew who looks so good does not have freedom because he's frozen, and you're describing the other Jew is the one that gets this, that understands this.
No, Paul painting the other one as the free-born Christian who can live in that but does not take his life, his identity, and from the elements of the world.
And understands this.
Yes. Because see, Judaism takes a great deal from the elements of the world, such as the new moon. Such as there's a set time for the Passover. You know which time of the year is that?
Spring.
Yeah, 14th of Nisan, which comes in the spring. Sometimes I'm between March and April. Between March and April, because they have the lunar, you know, and then, look, this is the text that freed my mother, my grandmother. And every time I read it, I remember her scream. It was a Friday afternoon, or Saturday morning, one of those, and I was, no, it was Friday, and I was making coffee. And I heard a scream of a wild animal. And I thought someone attacked her. I left the coffee on the stove and I ran, found her alone. What's going on? And she was angry with Paul. Well, who is he? I was too young to understand. Who's Paul? And said, that man, look what he says about us. Look at Galatians, at Colossians, sorry, chapter 2, verse 16.
Colossians?
Yes, 2:16. You know? You see the elements of the world in this. Come on, Mr. Reader, you have a better voice. Or you can sit, yeah.
Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath.
Go on.
These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ.
You see? In one line, he demolished Judaism. He demolished the whole of Judaism in one line. Look. Eat. Drink. Festivals. New moon. And
Sabbath.
And gone. And he said, all these are
shadow.
My goodness. Shadow, why? Because they are temporary. They lack the eternal. But the substance of the reality is
Christ,
the eternal Jesus.
Did it change your mom forever?
Oh, she
Grandma.
Said,
Grandma.
She said, if she can, if you meet Paul, she will cut off his head. And then, but gradually, when she became a Christian, she kept saying, oh, he was right after all. We were slaves. We had a taste of freedom in Christ. Oh, everything altered. You know? Oh, yes, he was. 100%, yes. You know? That's why. When, however, the fullness of time has come, you see, the break, God sent his son, born of woman, born under the law, in order that he might redeem those under the law. In order that we might receive adoptions as sons. And since you are sons, God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son, and if a son, also an heir through God. Right, can you imagine? You're going to be an heir of everything through God. Frightening idea, believe me, if we take it seriously.
Can you talk about verse 4? I haven't read the text yet, but verse 4...
Yes. Fullness of time?
When the fullness of time had come. And then God's Son put under law.
Yes.
God, how was Jesus under the law?
Because he was born a Jew. Circumcised on the eighth day, according to Luke, you know, lived all his life in Judea, arguing with the Pharisees, tried to bring the gospel to their life. They crucified him. He kept the law, certainly, but tried to bring them out of its shackles. Why didn't?
But the incarnation was the incarnation begins the new covenant, right?
Yes, but when it took place, it took place in the darkness of our human life. It didn't happen in space and on another planet.
Fancy place.
It happened in a environment where everything in that environment was against what Jesus actually didn't say. Look, read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. We call it the Sermon on the Mount, right? You have heard of the old this and that, but I shall say to you. Yeah? Look at something. When we say the law is a shadow and Christ is the reality, what does it mean? In under the law, thou shalt not commit adultery. Right? Adultery is two people going to bed. But Christ said, but I say to you, whoever look at a woman and lust after her in his heart has committed adultery in his heart. Now the reality starts to appear. It's not what you do visibly, it's what you are in your own heart. He says, you know, thou shalt not kill. But I'll tell you, if you are angry with your brother, you know, you shall come under judgment of death also. You know, and that goes on. You shall love your brother and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. You know where is the curses uttered in the Jewish prayers? Come on.
Yeah.
No, in the book of Psalms.
Oh, that, yeah.
Of course.
You can't read a psalm without, you know, it's like, oh, this is so pretty, and then they want to cut your enemy's head off. You're trying to...
You know?
Yeah.
In the book of Psalms, you know, my goodness. When the Christians out in the book of Psalms, you know, they're petrified, actually. One of the psalms we used to sing in the evening song in the Orthodox Church about Babylon, you know. Blessed are those who catch your children and dash their heads against the rock. Now, can you imagine? I catch a child, I was, you know, what does this mean? Augustine said, "Oh yes, you see." Augustine said, "Oh yes, the psalm is not talking about children. He's talking about the vices, because the rock is Christ, and we take our vices and dash them against." He went into allegory to avoid the harsh reality. You want harsh psalm?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Really? By the way, we use this against magic, actually. Psalm 35. Come on, Mr. Reader. I'll... This is a great piece. You know, whenever you are facing... evil presence, just recite the psalm. Yeah. Slowly.
Contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler and rise for my help. Draw the spear and javelin against my pursuers. Yeah. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. Let them be put to shame and dishonor who seek after my life. Let them be turned back and disappointed who devise evil against me. Let them be like chaff before the wind with the angel of the Lord driving them away.
These are very powerful, isn't it? Go ahead.
Let their way be dark and slippery with the angel of the Lord pursuing them.
To do what? Pursuing them. What do you think the angel of the Lord is supposed to do to them? Slaughter them.
Eliminate them.
Yeah, go ahead.
For without cause they hid their net for me. Without cause they dug a pit for my life. Let destruction come upon him when he does not know it.
Thank you. That's enough. And you know, that
my soul will rejoice in the Lord.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
His deliverance.
You never read that before?
Yes, I have. I just didn't think about it.
Okay, now he comes and says, oh, no. Bless those who curse you and pray for your enemies, you know? Well, do you really think this went into the community unnoticed? You really think that the anger against Jesus was a little volume of anger? No. He's going to change everything. Who is this man? This man is dangerous. Let's kill him. I don't know if you ever happened in your time, there was a leader who was so much like Luther. If Luther did not escape after the Council of Worms, he would have been killed, certainly. But the Prince of Lower Saxony gave him shelter and hid him in a castle. And he translates the Bible into German. You know, I like him. I really love him a lot. There are certain things I cannot agree, but nevertheless, the man is a great Christian. If this man was eliminated, things could have went back quiet, because prior to Martin Luther, another figure not known in America to those who are not familiar with the history, Huss. John Huss? H-O-S-S, Huss, or H-U-S-S. He was burned at the stake. Before that, another one, a Franciscan by the name called Bonaventura. You remember Bonaventura?
Okay. No? Bonaventure?
Yeah, Bonaventura. I would say.
We Americanize it to Bonaventure.
Okay, whatever.
But
the number of people who tried to speak the truth will burn alive. That could have been the fate of another man, Eckhart, the Dominican mystic. But God took pity on him while he was on the way to Rome for the Inquisition. He died. Once he died, they let no can touch him. But they put his books in the index, forbidden to be read or to be published, till John the 23rd brought them back. And when they were being opened to the readers, there was such a change in the Catholic, you know. You really think that Jesus is the only one who really met opposition? No. Behind Jesus stands a lion of people who really suffered a lot. I don't know about America today, if you stand up in a society and speak about freedom and liberty and whatever, I don't know what's going to happen to you. I don't know. I don't know. But in certain way, if you are outspoken person, you suffer. Okay. On page 2, you have a diagram of the what's a legal an analogy and the tribe. But coming back to your to your question, fullness of time is means simply when time is no longer used for anything. It expired. Do you buy something from the chemist or from Meyer and from grocery and say expired on that date? You know? Because why time expired? That's what we read in Colossians. Seasons, new Sabbath and new moon are no longer used for prayer. You can pray and celebrate at any time you want. Why? Because God and humanity are united in Jesus Christ. Very hard. Okay. We have a little bit for your friend, Philemon. On page 5.
Christ in me cannot quarrel or get angry with Christ in you. But how very often we go back to our old nature and even fight. First, we lack the penetration of love into the dark parts of our heart. And among these are self-love, pride, self-preservation, and fear. These negative forces cannot be conquered at all, except by a crucified life. And before you ask me what do I mean by a crucified life, I tell you, it is our new life which is established on the life of Jesus and is secure in the grace of eternal life. Second, it was said that 1,000 angels have one will, but one man has more than one will. Why is this so? Because we have a decay in us. We desire what is forbidden, but do not do it. But the desire stays in us till circumstances allows us to fulfill our desire, which we allowed it to grow. How can we be one in Jesus Christ? Only when Jesus is the only master of our life.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Sounds a little bit harsh, is it? Difficult? Why are you putting a funny face then?
Pretty simple, yeah. Jesus, don't complicate it with anything else.
Because, you know, there are things in our life that we have to look at. You know, our life in Christ must have, sooner or later, the lack of fear. No fear of judgment. Because I was talking to someone yesterday on the telephone for an hour. She was broken by the church, actually. We kept telling her, you know, she went through a divorce. Her husband was an animal, actually, according to her. Never met him. And they blamed her for everything. You know, God alone knows. You know, a problem is made by two, not by one. That we already know that. I'm broken, I need this, I need encouragement, I need joy. Okay. Look, here is something you need to remember. She had kids, too. When you had your first child, when he makes a dirty diaper, do you beat the kid? No. You get disgusted? No. If you as a human being have that compassion of the mother, what do you think God's compassion would be? Because you know, one day that little kid will grow up and will learn how to go to the restroom, isn't it? You know, and in that sense, God looks at us as people on the way to maturity. It's not said, you sinner, I'm going to beat you up. Well, you know, I don't know, you have to help me. From where we get that idea that punishment is a cure for evil? From the civil society that a serial killer is killed or put band bars for life, isn't it? And we think that we cured him. No. We put him into prison to protect the population. And in prison, this is my experience in England, kids were taken by the police, arrested for shoplifting, you know. When they spend a year in prison, when they are discharged, they are much worse. They learn more tricks. Oh, yes. Their life gone, actually. And you know, you cannot argue with the police because the law is blind. You remember when I said one of the bad things about the system of the world, it is impersonal. You know, you stole something, you take 6 months. What? You put your hand up.
I thought it was along with what you were saying about how people think you know, about God doing good and good, punishing people and judging them so harshly. And our church did a thing on good things, bad things happening to people. And a person had written in and said she had moved to another church and the pastor and her 2-year-old son had died, fallen into a pool and had died. And that new pastor had said something about her behavior, kind of implying maybe how she conducted herself, and as though it were maybe a judgment.
Her son.
And yes, and then had said something along the lines of, and so then he used this baby's death to help somebody else. You know, so it was kind of this double thing. And this was a pastor then saying this to this grieving mother of a two-year-old. And it's just so tragic that somebody who would pretend that they serve God would say that God at all judges like that and would be so punitive, and then it's just such a...
No, there is...
Awful. I mean, it's just...
This is a common mistake in our teaching.
It is.
There is no condemnation anymore. You know, I was arguing with Moses Philemon, and he said to me, "Brother George, since when a human being gets angry and cut off a member of his body?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "You are a member of the body of Christ Jesus. So God the Father will say, it's a dirty member, I'm going to cut it off." He can't do it.
There'll be nothing left of him.
Do you remember?
It does say cut off your left hand or right hand if it sins.
No, that's not the same.
It's not.
No, I mean, if it, you know, stumbling block means actually turning you away from the kingdom. It's not about actually sinning. It's about making a U-turn to refuse God altogether. You know? You know, if your eye, you know, what's the word? Pluck it. You know, it's better because it's about the kingdom. It's actually, in the Aramaic, it means simply, you have a greater choice. There's nothing in the life greater than the kingdom, and your body should not be greater than the kingdom. That's all. That's the bottom line. Doesn't mean
the kingdom is greater than your eye and your ear.
And your ear, you know. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know if punishment all came into being or whatever, but even the scripture, though, George said, I mean, in Proverbs it says, "He who spares the rod hates his son." And I know Hebrews has some talk of chastisement, but out of love, of course, that the Lord chastises those he loves.
Yes, but chastising in what sense? With anger and revenge?
That's the fine line. I don't know. My father whipped us.
You're not the only one, by the way.
But, the beatings today would have got him into jail. I mean, welts on my skin and stuff. But you know what? He loved me. And I know he still shows that love. And I know, it might have been out of anger at times, and I don't know, maybe it's inappropriate or whatever, but I believe it was out of love. I have no resentments toward that, you know, today. Maybe there was a better way to do it, but I know there's a lot of people that feel that we've lost that in our country. I talked to a patient's mother last night about her grief. She was just going off about her granddaughter. And about correction, and says, "I can't correct her. I have to take away privileges, but she's got a room full of stuff. It's like doing nothing." And then they come and tell me when their punishment's up. You know, there is no correction anymore. And like I say, the Bible talks about it, and I think maybe we've taken it harshly and interpreted this punishment and taken the love portion of it out. I agree with you. I wonder what good it does incarcerating a man for 50-some years. Because I, for one, don't believe that they're irreconcilable, and I believe everybody would be a miracle right on down to Charles Manson. You know, it's probably not likely, but, you know, if it be the Lord's will, what a wonderful thing for a man like that to repent.
Yeah, but you know, Monty, before I take a privilege, I have to argue with the kids about what is lost. You know?
Yeah.
I had a kid, actually. Listen carefully, because that was one of... I don't know if that's common in America or not. His pocket daily money from pocket... You know how many? $100 a day. Drugs, number one, other things. And then I said to him, you know, Do you know what you are doing to yourself? No, I'm not talking about taking the money away. Oh, he came to see me in a sports car. He's 18, had a driving license. And his dad gave him a gun, a pistol, a 45 caliber.
In England?
No, here in America.
Oh, okay.
For protection. Because he comes from a very wealthy family. And he was very proud. You know what I have in my car? He took me to Mile to get some medicine. I said, oh, I like your car. And he said, yes. What's in here? You want to know? Oh, you know that little cabin on the left-hand side?
Compartment.
And you know, call it cabin. Okay. Is that yours? It yes. You have a license? Yes. Why? Protection. Load it? I said, yes. Don't touch it. No, don't touch it. But, you know, he is lost. Now, the day I called his dad on the telephone, after I argued with him, that he is on a journey of self-destruction for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dictating them on a piece of paper for him to write. It wasn't really an oral talk at all. He pulled his gun on me.
The kid did?
Yeah. And I said to his dad, let him work in one of your factories to know that he has to sweat to get money. He lost sense of reality. He had everything in life is under his, you know, he didn't labor. Had no sense of how much his dad worked hard enough for him to enjoy that. Had no sense of labor. So I said to his dad, take all these things. And then his dad came, apologized for the gun thing, and said, I said, no, taking the gun or taking the gun or keep the gun is not my business. But he was very angry with me. Why? Because the $50 reduced into $100 per week. 50 and then 100 for a week. He really wept like a little kid. I want to live in the school. I want to do this. No. And I said to him, listen, you have to face reality. Your friends around you make use of you. They don't really love you because of who you are. They love you because of your money. Because what you do, if we take them to parties, to restaurants, buying them drinks. And you know, of course, when the money will go, then you are no longer needed. And then I said to him, try for a week. Not to invite anybody for anything. That's what's going to happen. See how many ask about you, and when they ask about you, they ask about you for what purpose? He did. Guess what? Are we going to the pub tonight? What's the name of that big restaurant who sell? You are expert in restaurants. It's a very expensive restaurant that sell very special steak.
St. Elmo's.
Chris.
Huh?
Chris.
No, no.
Peterson.
No.
Sullivan.
And you know, twice, you know, being texted by, when are we going to Sullivan? And I didn't know what is Sullivan, actually. What is Sullivan? You never been to Sullivan? I'll take you. I said, no, just tell me what is it first. You know, it is the life that has no reality. Now, that kid, particular person, has to be told, what did this life do to us, to him, and to the family? And when he was squeezed very hard to gain attention of his family, he tried to commit suicide. And when he was in hospital, I need to see George Bibel. So his mom came running to me and said, you know, he's crying for you. I said, I'm not going. Tell him I'm not going because he's a kid. I will go to him if he is a man, understand his actions. And he can come out of hospital, he can come here. George, please, you know, I said, you know, this extreme compassion will not reform him. He's a little bit tough. And that's it. But the money dried, sweet God. And the money dried, and now he's leading a normal life. He's earning his living. Oh, he works as a waiter, work in the garage, but things belong to his dad, actually. And so, of course, treated kindly. This is the way, I don't punish for the sake of punishment. You tell the person what shoplifting would do to you. What would happen to you if you actually steal a shirt that is not pay for it? You live in fear all your life. That one day someone is going to discover. And you will not enjoy it because you don't actually possess it. You won't even see its beauty. You will go and steal another one, and the third one, and the fourth one. Because if you labor for something, it really... we discovered in the university, if we give a handout free, the kids don't read it. So ask them to buy it. When they buy it, they read it. Of course, minimum, but they read it. If you give them a free book, they will not read it. But if they buy it, they have to read it.
That's where he was heading.
So, any questions before I would...
It's occurred earlier, but you were talking about how your past is your source of stability, but the story you just told, whether it might be the kid or shower, but your past could also be a source of instability.
Of growth. You see, when Paul says, I no longer look back, but I look ahead. Because looking back is certainly losing sight of your real life. Life lived in the past was good or was painful, was successful or was a failure, whatever. But if you look back, listen, I have two great people from history that, in my opinion, are great heroes. Now, the first one you all know is Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence of Arabia, after his great success, was given all the greatness. He went back to England and volunteered as a cadet at the Air Force, to start to climb the ladder from point one. Because you see, if you live in your glorious past, glorious, you will never develop. And the second one is a man by the name called Baphnos, 5th century abbot of a big monastic community. Baphnos. Which is a
B-A-F-N-O-S.
Yes, with abbreviation of Epiphanius, actually. It's a Coptic abbreviation of Epiphanius. He was a great abbot in a monastery. Everybody kissed his hand and asked for his blessing. And one night he said, I am lost. I am treated with such an honor, I have to leave. And he took off his ecclesiastical garments and fled to Palestine, and went to one of the monasteries and asked them to accept him as a farmer. And the abbot looked at him and said, you want to be a monk here? And he said, yes, but you are too old for us. You are useless. Go talk to the farm and work in the farm. And appoint a young man who made his life real hell. Do this, dig this, do this. And he used to go and sleep, and I said, Lord, thank you. I lost all the honor. I lost all the titles. And this young man is treating me as if I'm a wild animal. Thank you, Lord, that now I am really discovering what's hidden inside me. And one day he was digging a canal in the monastery, when a group of monks from his own monastery came to his monastery and saw him. So they prostrate and ask for blessing and kissed his hand. And the monk said, "Who is that?" "Oh, he was an abbot in Egypt." "Oh no." And then they took him to church and gave him the classical garments. And then at night he said, "I came to Palestine. What am I going to do?" And at night he sneaked away into Iraq. Left his son to Iraq. And there his news vanished. He left a letter saying, "I cannot live where I am completely honored and respected, because that does not give me time to reflect on my own conduct. I became too much interested in the external things, leaving, you know, the inner mind and the inner heart." And I keep saying, "How lovely. You know, one secular who could not cope with his success became a cadet, and the other want to become a novice, did not even succeed." Because you see, here it is. You are fallen, you start from zero. And I like that. When I was leaving Cambridge, he said to me, "You have been a professor here, what are you going to do in England?" I said, "I'll work in a shop." "Where are you going to work?" "I sell tea and coffee." "You don't." I said, "I do. American people are nice people. I'll get tips, you know. It'd be even more than the salary you pay by the university." And they were horrified. "What are you going to do?" "Nothing. There's a beautiful lady waiting for me to marry. My job to be her husband. That's all. You know, I know that's it. To start from zero. To start from zero. You know, if your life has been a failure, go to point one.
Or it sounds like it's been a success.
Huh? That's up to that to say.
That's what Laura's writing.
Yeah, no, that's a good lesson. That's, I like
that. Oh, absolutely. And you know, if you really look for a stable life that has no storms, you know, Falim says to me, learn your lesson from the trees. And you know, when we pass by, is it 136? Where you have the burning bush?
Springvale.
There's a line of burning bush trees. Beautiful.
Yeah.
They blossom and become like flames of fire for about a month.
Just the season.
Now it's brown sticks.
And then, you know, and then the rain and the wind, within a week, they become brown. But they blossom again. The renewal. If the outer is fading, the inner is renewed daily. That's Paul. And he said, learn from the trees that life can go on and on, because the power that has to renew you is not you, it's the power of Jesus himself.
Amen.
So please read the prayer, pray to Jesus and to Abba Father and to the Spirit and to the Trinity, and God bless you. And don't forget to play for Miss Clinton. She must be really in a bad shape. That's a poor thing.
Yeah.
I honestly really feel sorry for her, truly.
Yeah.
And pray for your country, because the new man has been, the election of the new man, I read the newspaper, is causing a panic.
Yeah.